The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Brian Friel. Brian is the founder and CEO of Nation Analytics, a consulting firm that analyzes the federal marketplace, current trends. You know, you've made a name a lot in the IDIQ world, analyzing trends at task order levels and competitions and how competitions for those contracts are awarded. And I know we're going to talk about that, especially what you see going on and particularly the use of scorecards. But you know, we've got a lot to cover today, so I want to start with what's on everybody's mind, which is the transition. But first of all, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Roger. It's great to be back with you.
With regard to the transition, as you know, there's a regulatory freeze right now as the administration gets his footing across government, but in the procurement world, you know, that's an interesting dynamic because there's lots still out there that's sort of pent up. There's a lot of regulatory action just before the last administration left. You know, some of that stuff may never see the light of day again. Obviously, some of it may be come out if it results in streamlining, I guess, so to speak. But big picture wise, as we're in that sort of this phase, pause and reflect, I guess, for lack of a better term, what do you expect the main themes and priorities and acquisition policy to be for this administration?
I think we got a great blueprint for the, at least thematically, how the administration is going to approach procurement policy in the opening pages of what everyone's calling the skinny budget, the budget blueprint that the administration issued last week. And I really encourage everyone to go read that document. The first couple pages of it serve as a framework for the president's management agenda. And it even calls it that, the president's management agenda. And in it, it really talks about a couple key themes, one of which I think many contractors and many people in the procurement shops around government would welcome, which is a something of a decentralization or a re-empowerment of buyers in the local agencies, not making everything sort of flowing up, but instead creating a sort of deregulatory emphasis that says to managers, we're going to hold you accountable for results. We're not going to layer additional compliance requirements on you. And we really did see a lot of additional compliance requirements layered on top of procurement folks over the last few years.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, that language in the budget about, you know, giving managers at agency level managers the discretion to, you know, run their programs, but holding them accountable is a different, you know, to me, it's, you listen, read that language, it seems like it's a fundamentally different approach in the procurement world than what was taking place towards the end of the last administration, which was a lot about centralization. You have the category management on a government-wide basis. You had the OMB circular with regard to category management, the proposed circular that would truly centralize, would have centralized a lot through OFPP and OMB. So do you see, I mean, I think you alluded to it, but you know, is your sense that across agencies, customer agencies in the government, that this is like, there's some relief that, we might get an opportunity here or a different approach where we have a bit more flexibility, or what's your feeling on that?
Yeah, one of the last things that the previous administration did was put out this category management circular, which was designed to serve as a framework of how the government should attack procurement decision making in a very centralized way. And I think it's safe to assume that that is going to go away, and instead we'll see is agencies being told, we expect you to deliver value to the taxpayer, but we're not going to require you to do it in the way that OMB necessarily wants you to do it. We'll give you the flexibility to make decisions that make sense for your agency. We saw the last time we really saw that kind of emphasis was in the Clinton administration, during the National Performance Review, and so this isn't really a partisan issue in my view. It's really sort of a management,
more philosophical approach, and there could be it doesn't it doesn't divide by party lines particularly. So do you see other shifts from the Obama administration to the Trump era, I guess, in addition to that sort of approach?
Well, one thing that I've really been trying to think about, what are the implications of, are the pre-inaugural tweets from the president around the pricing on the F-35 program and on Air Force One, and the president taking a personal interest in that. And this is a president who's been the head of an organization that it did was negotiate contracts, and so we really haven't had an occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue that has had that much negotiation experience, and he really views it as his strength. And so I think trickling down, then I think what we should expect to see is the government thinking about how it gets the best price out of its suppliers. And there's a call in Congress to investigate some of the defense suppliers of aerospace parts and whether they are marking up parts because the government is captive to them. And I think we'll see more of that kind of review. Again, not necessarily from the president himself going forward, because he took the two biggest programs, but he sent a signal to the buying organizations around government that he wants them to really be looking at very critically at the prices that are being charged to them.
Well, I'll just to follow up, the flip side of that is, do you see an opportunity for industry? Because when you think you want to get a better price or you want to get a better deal, well, the deal's got to be structured better, right? In part, right? So does it mean streamlining, reducing, certain process requirements or compliance requirements to get more competition? I mean, where do you see that as an opportunity for industry to sort of educate government about, how you can save money in the, by addressing the processes that you're using?
Oh yeah, definitely. Because you can. Just off the top of your head, think of lots of government requirements that add to the costs that companies then pass back to the government, right?
Right.
And so if you've got this concerted effort to try and reduce the compliance burden on agencies in acquisition and in other areas, but in acquisition in particular, I do think that there's an opportunity for companies to engage with the folks that are coming in with the Trump administration to help them see how things could be done more efficiently. There's, if you look in the IT space, most of the spending on IT is propping up very old existing legacy systems. And the government, could arguably save a lot of money if it found ways to transition the legacy systems to cheaper options, and so that's not necessarily. I think it would be wrong to think, the focus here is going to be on trying to squeeze the contractors themselves. It's really looking holistically at what the government is buying and squeezing dollars out of that overall system.
Right. On that note, Brian, when we come back, I'm going to keep our discussion on transition going and perhaps get into a bit more into the budget, but I'm going to ask you to give your thoughts on, what does this mean legislatively? Do we see things like, where is IT modernization going to go? There were efforts in the last Congress to do something around that effort and initiative. My guest today is Brian Friel. He is a founder and CEO of Nation Analytics, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Brian Friel. Brian is the founder of Nation Analytics. Excuse me there, Brian. And we've been talking transition, and we're going to continue that because I want to get your sense or your thoughts. We closed the last segment, and you were talking about IT modernization, and you know, there's an opportunity there to save the government a lot of money if it could get off its legacy systems and actually acquire some 21st century technology. And we could talk about innovation too, and the warfighter and DOD along those lines as well. But what do you see, or where do you think the congressional focus on, you know, IT modernization, innovation, you know, acquisition reform will be in this Congress?
I think there's a real challenge here when you've got an administration that's focused on reducing regulatory burden and compliance, to think about how you approach legislation in this area that doesn't add to that burden.
Right.
Right. I mean, so often you try and solve the problem of complexity in the IT systems and in the procurement system, and you end up adding complexity. So I almost wonder if we'll see sort of a pause in any real significant legislation for a couple years in this area while the administration attempts to see what it can do administratively. I think that also gives the administration time to really think through and kind of live within this world to see what legislation is currently in the way of a system that is more efficient.
Right. Well, along those lines, I have to go back and ask you, though, like, well, that may be the administration's preference. We don't know, or they may come in and look at things and say, well, we need to change this law. That's possible, too. But they also may get legislation, at least initially, that, you know, maybe they weren't that interested in initially, but here it is. And I don't know if what that would or wouldn't be, but I know there's a lot of interest on the Hill in IT modernization. You know, and there's the idea of the IT modernization fund, the Hoyer bill from last year, and Hurd and all those folks. And so do you see that as an area where there might be something happening, or do you think it will, the pause and reflect that you mentioned would sort of be, I mean, it's going to take a year anyway, right?
Yeah.
Maybe before anything. By the time we talk about this again, it's going to be 2018. It'll be going into congressional elections, right?
So. Yeah. And if to the extent that there would be an IT modernization fund, I think we would probably see it more in the form of flexibility in the way agencies manage their own budgets rather than a central IT modernization fund. Because again, if the focus is devolving power, right? Then if you create a central fund, then you have central,
you have accountability. Well, you have a different kind of accountability, right?
So, you know, I think more like models like the Working Capital Fund or the ability of DOD to have multi-year funding might be ways that you could address that issue in IT.
Sure.
You know, using sort of existing frameworks, rather than create something entirely new.
So when you're looking at the landscape, you know, what do you think companies need to think about as they, you know, think about where, you know, whether either this pause and reflect era, what should companies be doing? Where, I mean, I think one of the things we touched on a little bit is, you know, share where the processes increase costs. I think it's incumbent on industry. If you want a return on investment for reducing regulation, this is how it's going to save you money. I think that's definitely a conversation. Do you have other, you know, just when you're thinking about the market in that area, you know, and I guess we'll talk a little bit about the budget in that context too, but, you know, what do you think companies need to think about, you know, when they're thinking about, you know, how to impact the current process?
Yeah, well, I think one of my favorite sayings is policy drives procurement. You know, the government doesn't create an RFP out of nowhere. There's some underlying policy problem that the government is trying to solve when it hires a contractor to do work. And so I think it's a good time for contractors to step back and think about what are the policy drivers that influence the what the government buys that they sell, and think about ways that they could encourage that policy to provide better outcomes for the government. And that might and it doesn't necessarily mean just cutting the funding for that, right?
Sure.
It might be that there's some of the work that the company does is in an area that if there was more spending in that area, the government would save money because they could spend less somewhere else.
Right.
Right.
Productivity improvements or something initially. Yeah.
And so like I think about IT companies, a lot of them have significant revenue maintaining legacy systems, right? But if much of your work is in that area, I think what you want to be thinking about is how you can help the government transition to to more modern systems through the cloud, through apps, that kind of thing.
I was going to ask you about the cloud. Do you see, the cloud, has grown, but I don't think it's, cross government has reached its full potential. Is that your sense?
Yeah, I think there's still tremendous growth potential there. And I think of it, the cloud is this weird phrase, right? It
right.
could mean lots of things to different people.
Well, but it can be cloudy, it can be rainy. Right. Clouds can lead to snow, rain, right?
But the way I think of it in the government context is you currently have a lot of systems that information cannot get out of those systems easily. And you're trying to transition to a system where the information in those systems becomes unlocked and can move among the systems. And that's sort of how I see sort of cloud, the way to think about the cloud in the government. And so I think there's tremendous opportunity in the next couple of years.
Now, because cloud would support, the mobile workforce that we have, right? Everybody's connected, right? Via your phones or your iPads or all that—that's all cloud-based, right?
Yeah, and I mean, in the government world, there's also the security challenge and a lot of that stuff you don't want so easily accessible. But so that's why I go back to the idea of the focus should be unlocking information from systems that they're stuck in.
Right.
It can still be in a secure environment. It doesn't have to be in sort of a big public cloud the way a lot of times we think about cloud.
Okay, well, we've talked a lot about transition, and we got about 2 minutes left. We can start our budget conversation, okay? Yeah. So the skinny budget. I've never heard of a federal skinny budget. So what is that?
Well, this is just the 64-page blueprint for what the president's administration plans to propose in much deeper form later in the year. And that when we'll see the fat budget of, thousands of pages of details. But I think it does give you a clear sense of how the administration, what the administration's opening bid is in the negotiation for the fiscal 2018 budget. And I think you really have to think of it that way. It's a lot of times when you see coverage of the budget, it says the budget cuts NIH by X percent or increases defense by X percent. But remember that it's only proposing to do those things. We really won't. There's going to be people protecting the things that want to be that the administration wants to cut, and pushing for the money that the administration wants to bump up in other areas to go to their preferred programs. So I don't think it's by any means the end of the game. It's really only the beginning.
Right. And along those lines, can you start to talk about a little bit? You alluded to it, but the proposed increases in defense versus where there's going to be cuts. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So the skinny budget, the way it tackles the increase in defense is it takes a dollar from the civilian side for every dollar that it wants to increase on the defense side. And what's happened over the past 5 years or so, when you had a Democratic president and a Republican Congress, was the deal was more dollar for dollar increases or decreases. So any dollar that went up on the defense side, you had to see a similar dollar increase on the civilian side.
So you keep the same percentages all the time, right?
And so, really? so the Trump administration is proposing to flip that, right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the kind of thing that Democrats in Congress will not bend on. I don't think that they will agree to a commensurate civilian cut for every dollar increase on the defense side. Now, could it end up being split the difference, increase the defense side and keep civilian flat, right? I think that's one scenario, one potential scenario. Another scenario is that they find a way to increase the civilian side, maybe not as much, maybe not dollar for dollar, but still have some element of an increase has to be on one side, has to be accompanied by an increase on the other. I think it's interesting that the budget blueprint essentially keeps the framework of the 2011 Budget Control Act, mm-hmm. which established caps on discretionary spending. It doesn't propose getting rid of that law altogether. And I think that's actually a really important point, because it should say to companies that we're still going to be living for some period of time here in an austere environment, where you're really going to be needing to think about increasing value to the government, and fighting for market share. There's not going to be
a huge market increase, except maybe DOD. We have to take a break right now, Brian. My guest today is Brian Friel. He's a founder and CEO of Nation Analytics. And when we come back, we'll continue our budget conversation, and we'll start to get into IDIQ contracts and just procurement in general, what's going on there in terms of the market. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Brian Friel. He's a founder, CEO of Nation Analytics, and we've been talking transition. We've been talking budget, and I'll continue that. And I just, so the takeaway here, I want to put you on the spot, say who are the winners and who are the losers coming out of the budget, the skinny budget, the 62 page budget?
Yeah.
That's going to be, it's a framework for the big kahuna that's coming down the road.
So I think let's start with the winners. It's always better to start with the good news. Is that, I think you first focus on where are there areas of bipartisan agreement. So the Veterans Affairs Department, the president proposed increasing the budget there. Democrats will agree to that. Cybersecurity spending anywhere in the government. There's a bipartisan agreement that that the government needs to focus on that area and increase its spending, and then the readiness of the military. I think there might be a fairly big fight about platform spending, about more planes,
new systems,
and tanks,
or whatever,
and everything.
Yeah.
But I think it's safe to assume that we'll see more money spent on the readiness budget on the military side.
Okay, and those are the winners. Any civilian winners?
I think there will be
cyber in the civilian context, right? DHS.
Well, see, DHS, there's not bipartisan agreement, right? You on where the increases
should go.
So I'm not totally sold yet on whether we'll just see a wash.
I guess that's true. I guess we've got the wall, right? The question of the wall, and there's
and the wall and the spending on the wall. It might have to take money from elsewhere in the DHS DHS budget. So on losers, right? I think you're gonna, the Coast Guard is in a really tough spot, and anybody at DHS that can't clearly show that it has a relation to the southern border,
sure.
security, because at the end of the day, if Congress doesn't appropriate additional money, you could see reprogramming from within DHS. I think USAID probably ends up being a loser, and I don't actually think the State Department so much, because I think there is pretty strong support for the State Department on the Republican side of in Congress, the overall diplomatic mission. But I do think USAID is somewhere that's probably going to end up being cut, and I do think that the EPA will end up, I don't think it'll end up being cut as dramatically as imagined in the budget, but I do think the EPA will have to end up taking some cuts.
Okay, any final thoughts on the budget for contractors? I know you made your point about it's not going to be, we're talking still, I guess sort of measured spending, not we're not going to see huge amounts of additional amounts of money.
I guess one thing I'd say is don't. I wouldn't encourage people to abandon the civilian side of government entirely just because the budget says that there's going to be an increase on the DoD side. There will be more growth on the DoD side, right? But there's still a tremendous amount of spending by the
right.
civilian
agencies. Right. I mean, it would be the smart folks will stick it out, I think. Yeah. So I know another thing that, and I think what you are sort of famous for is, in part, is along with budget stuff, but also, looking at trends in procurement, in procurement operations more specifically, like we're talking multi-board IDIQs, task order competitions, how that's all playing out in the market currently. So I just wanted to give you a chance to first open and say what's going on right now. We're in the midst of some major procurements, right? You know, and where they are and some that are in place.
Yeah. So, well, yeah. And in the IT area, particularly on IT services, we're in the middle of the most dramatic reshuffling of the IDIQ portfolio that the government has that we've seen in a decade. So you've got the recompete of the Alliant program at the General Services Administration underway. That's in source selection right now. There's a small business component to that and a full and open that mostly large businesses side. And that program, is already north of $3 billion a year. And I think will grow even further once Alliant 2 is awarded later this year. You've also got in source selection the Defense Information Systems Agency's primary IT services IDIQ, Encore 3. There's a competition underway for a companion IDIQ at Defense Information Systems Agency. And there's always these acronyms, Roger, but so bear with me, but it's called SETI. The Army is recompeting its major IT services contract, the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, the Justice Department. So you have across the board all these really significant contract vehicle competitions. And when the dust is settled early next year, we'll probably see most of these having been awarded. You'll really see what the playing field is in the IT services space for the next decade, because these are decade-long contracts. And we're seeing a general trend toward agencies moving work in the IT services space to those vehicles, in particular contracts like Alliant and the CIOSP3 contract run by NIH, which is also a government-wide contract. There's not a lot of new IDIQs in the IT services space being created right now. There are some, but there's not that many. And I think the reason is because the cost of creating those contract vehicles is pretty high, and they take a long time to create. And so where we saw a lot of new vehicles being created over, in the last decade, now we're seeing agencies stop and say, maybe I don't need to create a new contract vehicle for myself. I can just use existing vehicles. And both Special Operations Command and Defense Health Agency have made those decisions and have decided not to compete new vehicles and instead move work to existing contracts. The Agriculture Department recently decided to use the CIOSP3 contracts rather than create its own IDIQ.
So DHS, are they using Alliant or
DHS
primarily?
has a contract called Eagle 2.
DHA.
Yeah, DHA, right. So DHA right now uses lots of different vehicles. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is on CIOSP3. DHA was going to create its own vehicle.
I remember that.
And instead, GSA convinced them not to create it and to instead start using GSA programs, and not just Alliant, but also the schedules. Mm-hmm. And I think the Schedule 70 is sort of the unsung workhorse of the IT space. Whenever there are problems with other contract vehicles, agencies turn to Schedule 70 as their backup. I don't see necessarily Schedule 70 becoming a place where there's really substantial growth, but I do think that agencies are starting to give that program more of a second look than they did in the past.
Well, yeah, when GSA has created like the cyber SINs recently, and the cloud, and I mean they're trying to, and they've created separate line items for health IT,
right?
And you know, there's always been significant debate whether that makes sense or not, but I just think people see them reacting to what their customers are asking for.
That's right.
And creation of those things. So, Encore 3, what's your thoughts? I mean, I know that ended up as an LPTA. Do you think in the long run do you have any thoughts on whether that affects the long run viability of that for both customer agencies and contractors?
I mean, most IT services IDIQs are competed as best value trade-off procurements. The trend, if anything, has been away to the opposite end of the spectrum, away from LPTA toward this GSA developed approach called highest technically rated with fair and reasonable prices. That ultimately the decision of who makes the contract comes down to technical factors. So Encore 3 is a real outlier in using LPTA for the contract vehicle competition to decide who is selected. And it obviously means that the companies with the lowest prices will win, right? And
right.
So then buyers have to make a decision as to whether the service levels that they want are achievable given the prices that are selected for Encore 3. And so I think that Encore 3 will be a place where you see, you know, heavily commoditized type services go, where the government thinks it's fine if we...
Right, there's not that much to distinguish somebody in a best value context.
But I think...
And you don't need greater service, right?
Yeah. But I think by and large, most IT services agencies do want
greater,
to make some trade-off decisions and consider this, you know, best value. And so I think that Encore 3 will be a much smaller vehicle than Encore 2. Now, DISA has another contract called SETI that I mentioned that some of that work will go to, but some of the work will go to Alliant and elsewhere.
Right. Well, we'll continue this discussion when we come back. We'll continue to talk about, you know, the landscape out there, and we'll talk some more as well about the scorecard approach and what it means, what you're seeing in the marketplace with that. My guest today is Brian Friel. He is the CEO and founder of Nation Analytics, and you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Brian Friel. Brian is a founder and CEO of Nation Analytics. And Brian, we're talking about procurement operations, like those IDIQs and task order competitions and that sort of thing. And I guess, you know, we did a lot on the IT market, at least the big IDIQs that are out there. As you see in other trends or what with other contract vehicles and in other parts of the procurement space that are worthy of note?
Yeah, well, you know, the professional services area, that's management consulting, engineering services, that's actually a bigger market than IT services in the government. And it's much more diffuse. There's lots of single award contracts that are used for professional services. The Army is in the middle of creating its RS3 contract for professional services. But the biggest story, I think, in professional services is OASIS, the General Services Administration's multiple award IDIQ that the Air Force has committed to using for billions of dollars in professional services spend. The Army, the Homeland Security Department, the Navy, the DOD agencies outside the services have all committed to using OASIS for really significant amounts of spend. And so in the next couple of years, we'll probably see opportunities for companies to get onto OASIS. And I think anybody in the professional service space will have to evaluate that because we've already seen $12 billion of work move onto that contract, and it'll just continue to grow over the next couple of years.
Or people will be looking at, you know, buying opportunities, right? Mergers or acquisitions to get onto that vehicle, perhaps a little bit.
Oh yeah. Right. So you can use M&A to buy to get on, or there will be on ramp opportunities.
Oh, yeah.
But from GSA.
So what do you think? Your sense? How does OASIS play? Or if people are moving work to them, are they moving it away from their own contracts? Or are they moving it from the professional services schedule? Is a little bit of both. What's your sense of where they're coming from to go to OASIS?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. There's more spend outside of the schedules to move to Oasis than there is on the schedules to move to Oasis. So there's a little bit of, you know, sort of cannibalization, but most of what is coming on is from vehicles like the Air Force had a program called E-Pass, and that work has moved on to Oasis. The Homeland Security Department had a contract vehicle called TABS, and that TABS work is moving on to Oasis. And so it's really supplanting a lot of disparate
agency
vehicles,
specific, agency yeah. specific vehicles. So what about I would remiss one of the last recent ones they actually awarded GSA awarded was HCATS, right? And that's the training and human resources IDIQ that GSA has partnered with OPM to put in place. I think it was just awarded last year. Is there any, have any, observations what's going on in that space?
As far as I know, no task orders have been awarded on that contract yet. I think that vehicle will not be as significant as, say, in the training space, as say Oasis is in the professional services or Align in the IT services space, in part because there's a relatively significant fee for using that vehicle, and also because it took a really long time for that vehicle to be awarded, and agencies have adopted other methods of procuring training services in the meantime. And I think then when they look at a fee to use the HCATS program, they may decide, we'll just keep buying it the way we did before.
But do you think if they lowered the fee, they could make it more competitive?
They could do that. And also one challenge is that for whatever reason, the evaluation process confused a lot of the bidders, and so a lot of very qualified companies were left out of the contract vehicle. And so you've got a significant portion of the vendors in that space not on that contract, and so that doesn't help make the case for agencies to go there, because they can look at it and see that some of the companies that they like to use for that kind of work are not on there. So I think that's another thing we might see is a reopening of it.
Yeah, reopening of that to get more people. Yeah, to address that. One of the things that I know you focused on over the last 2 or 3 years and did a lot of work on, and it's it's in following Oasis and then Alliant 2, and I think even HCATS used this scorecard approach. So is this now the standard process? Are you seeing it grow beyond GSA?
The first two non-GSA vehicles that are going to be awarded using a scorecard approach will occur this year. One, the Housing and Urban Development Department has put out a draft RFP using the scorecard for training services. And the Air Force is planning next month to release an RFP in the IT services space using this scorecard approach. And it basically requires bidders to self-score themselves on a set of criteria and then provide documentation that backs up those scores. So it's there's hardly any narrative writing to it. It's really a sort of data-driven approach to procurement. And the reason I think it will spread is because all protests against these scorecard evaluations have failed at GAO. And so agencies are coming to view it as a protest-proof means of awarding IDIQs.
Right. Well, and how do they evaluate price on these things? There's not a cost technical trade-off. Is that correct?
That's right. It's really ultimately the technical factors on pricing. The agency tells you up front what's considered fair and reasonable prices. They give you a range, and everybody submits within that range, and then their prices are considered fair and reasonable. There's actually a provision in the Defense Authorization Act for this year that would allow agencies to award IDIQs, leaving price out entirely.
Right, right. And that's for DOD.
Yeah. And we haven't seen that yet, but I think it fits in that same mode of focusing on technical factors to pick who competes in an IDIQ.
Right.
And leave price to the task order level.
Mm-hmm. So, who wins and loses in that, in the federal space? Is it all come down to the evaluation? And then, as it always does, the evaluation criteria, right? In terms of capability and whether you have the depth and breadth of experience.
The way that agencies have used the scorecard so far, it really, the winners tend to be companies that have a lot of experience with federal agencies, because the score cards put an incentive on, on work for the federal government, prior work for the federal government. But you could see a scorecard approach that that doesn't incentivize that. It could incentivize commercial experience. But so far, winners tend to be the what I call the usual suspects. The companies that do that kind of work already for the federal government tend to be the ones that win in these kinds of contracts.
Real quickly, I forgot to ask you when we were talking earlier about IDIQs, any thoughts on the future of Seaport?
Yeah, well, we're already seeing work fall off of Seaport, right? So Seaport-E ends in the ordering period ends in 3 years, in 2 years now, right? In 2019.
That'd be 2 years.
Time flies.
Yeah.
Work can extend another 5 years out after that on task orders, but the Navy still doesn't have an acquisition strategy in place for what comes after Seaport-E. And so we're seeing work start to move to OASIS at the Navy to standalone contracts, to sort of mini IDIQs that are very specialized within the Navy. So my expectation would be that there would be another Seaport-E, but because it's taking the Navy hasn't settled on an acquisition strategy, it'll be a smaller, less important vehicle than it has been in the past.
Okay. Hey, Brian, great information as always. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks, Roger.
Yeah, my guest today has been Brian Frio. Brian is a founder and CEO of Nation Analytics, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.